Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution and production made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, January 23rd, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become a better than average investor, above average investing for the average investor. And we try to be a resource to help you make the best possible choices that you possibly can make with your money and hopefully reach your goals. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, about how setting goals and reaching your goals are very important. And setting goals is the first start into reaching those goals. So that's one of the things we're going to discuss. But you know, as the average investor looks for answers to managing their retirement portfolio, there's a limited amount of time. And the idea of automated trading comes into the conversation, robo-advising. And automated trading for retail investors is nothing new. It's been around for a long time. And if you're an avid CNBC viewer, which I hope you're not, because usually you get bad information there, you would see countless brokerage commercials advertising trading platforms, which allow investors to set up personalized automated trading systems. And they automatically buy or sell stocks based on certain criteria. This could be technical, could be fundamental. Usually it's technical. But these trade entry and exit points can be as simple as conditions that are met based on a moving average crossover or things that could be a lot more complicated than that. Now, algorithmic trading systems like this tend to appeal to retail investors for a few reasons. One, it reduces the emotions that are attached to making decisions of when to buy and sell, which frankly is probably a good thing to try to help avoid, because the average investor tends to make emotional buy and sell decisions. So these help keep emotions in check. And investors are more likely to stick to their plan because guess what? It's automated. Investors can also back test their strategies and have them carried out precisely as tested without human involvement at all, right? And trades also will be carried out immediately with virtually no lag time as opposed to humans who, you know, we got to pull the trigger. And a lot of times the emotions can either stop us or force us to make trades that maybe wouldn't otherwise or shouldn't otherwise be done. Now, though the positives for automated trading make it very attractive and they sound great, there's another side to it. There could be mechanical failures can ruin your model and cost you a lot of money. But there's also internet connection failures. An order maybe never be placed or maybe temporarily locked into an unfavorable position. Despite how great a success of the back testing was, it's no indication of how successful that will be in the future. There's a saying of past performance is no indication of future performance. That's kind of what we say in the industry, and it's true. And different markets act very differently. You know, we talk about growth versus value investing and how things are kind of switching to value investing, right? Well, if you are back testing a strategy in a growth favorable market, and then you go and use that strategy in a value favorable market, you're going to get very different returns. Okay. And it's very difficult to tweak that model into the new market that maybe was different than previous markets that you were backtesting against. And then, you know, there's the systems that say, oh, it's going to buy and sell and here's the past performance and blah, blah, blah. Well, what you have to remember, these black boxes, if they're so good, why would they go out there and give it to everybody else? Because everyone else is just going to front run their trades. They're not going to be as consistent. They're not going to be able to execute the trades once everybody is doing the same thing, right? And that's going to eventually minimize or reduce or get rid of the returns that the algorithm or strategy was designed to create, because everybody and their mother's doing it. So if a black box strategy is working or has worked, then why wouldn't these companies just do it themselves and make way more money than trying to sell it to you? This is another example of how, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Okay. If it's super easy and you're getting giant returns, sure. Could that work in a short period of time? Yeah. But if it worked consistently over an extended period of time, there'd be absolutely no reason for any company to go and try to sell it to the public. They would just do it themselves and continue to make gobs and gobs of money. And usually what happens is, even if they do work for a short period of time, they tend to not work in the at some point, and all those, or a lot of the gains that you might have made in the short term, get erased because markets change. That algorithm doesn't work anymore. That strategy doesn't work anymore. So weighing the pros and the cons of automated trading, it would suggest letting the professionals who invest millions over long periods and have experience in implementing trading strategies have the upper hand. They do. We have a superior edge than the average person. We have more patience. We have more data. We have more experience. We have more skills. We have more perspective. That's just generally how it works. So don't get bought into these trading black boxes and trading programs, because, like I said, if they worked so well, they would never be sold. They would just do it themselves. So don't try to compete. And, it's all about making sound decisions over the long term for you, not the quick, easy way out of investing, right? It's a lot harder than those commercials try to make you believe. Now, can they be tools? Are there tools out there and software that you could buy that could be beneficial and helpful? Absolutely. But no system is going to give you the holy grail. Okay. So let's begin our Q&A session. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. I want to hear from you. We have about 45 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to get your call in, do it sooner rather than later. Our time does go by quick, so give us a call at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I love your show. This is Katie in Green Bay. I have a question regarding my son, who's a senior in high school. He'll be graduating in May, and we've been saving diligently for his college education and have saved the complete amount for it. It's in a 529 plan in a fund called the American Fund. I just got a document yesterday. It's been getting about 5 to 5.5% a year. And my husband and I are unsure, what do we do at this time with the market potentially turning? Do we pull it out of there and put it somewhere else? Any input would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.
Well, I didn't get enough information about what it's in. Now, you said it's in American funds. Well, American funds is just a fund family. And they have a lot of different types of funds, from foreign funds, domestic equity funds, bond funds, a lot of different types of funds. And I would imagine you can move it around into different American funds, right? And maybe get more conservative, which is probably what you should do. It sounds like I think you said your son is close to going to college. So he's going to need that money relatively soon. So you want to start becoming very conservative, especially in this market, with that money. So I would move most, if not all, into a short or medium-term bond fund, probably short-term, especially maybe not. I'm not too worried about interest rates rising in the near term, but longer term, I think they will. But your son's going to need that in the next 4 years, and quarter of that each year probably. So I would move it all, find a good American fund that has no load, no transaction fee, et cetera, that is a short-term, high-grade corporate bond fund. I think that's probably the best place that you can be right now. And as you pull money out, you know, that'll still earn some return, but it shouldn't have big fluctuations like it would be if you were in an equity-focused fund. So get rid of or reduce dramatically any exposure to any equities in that portfolio, equity-related funds in that portfolio. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. Let's make the most of this hour together. I want you to be part of the conversation. I want to hear what's on your mind. What about your investing experiences? What are you thinking about buying and selling? What industries are you looking at? What sectors? What does the Trump presidency mean for your portfolio? We can talk about all these challenges and more. Just give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now, the idea is to have more flexibility in an effort to hedge portfolio positions. So the question is, should you be adding more alternative investments to your portfolio? That's our main talking point today, but I also have some other ones as well. Well, I think we should talk a little bit about Trump and his budget director appointee. Hasn't been confirmed, but he is going to go through some hearings tomorrow on Tuesday. Mick Mulvaney is his is the White House budget director, or at least the nominee to be the White House budget director. And there's some conflicts between Trump's policies and what Mulvaney tends to want out of our government budget. So I think that's going to be very interesting to discuss and how that dynamic evolves over time. Also, commodities. Are we poised for a rally, a continued rally in commodities? And what area of the commodity space is poised to be the best performer? And there's some recent performance of commodities in relation to the dollar. And also, does the rise in gold indicate that the Trump rally is fading? So we'll talk about that. And then your financial priorities, how do they stack up? Remember the food pyramid from the U.S. Department of Agriculture back in the day, and back in 1992? Well, they scrapped that recently, but I still think it's a good basis to understand what areas of managing your money are most important. It's not all created equal, right? What's more important, your asset allocation? Is it the specific investments in your portfolio, your savings, your budget, your goals? What's the most important part of the picture when it comes to managing your wealth? So we're going to talk about all those things and more. Whatever's on your mind, I want to hear from you. Let's take a quick look at the market today. We had the Dow was down 27 points. S&P was down 6. NASDAQ down 2. Very modest down day. Still, you know, the market's kind of pinned up here. Dow close to 20,000, but still hasn't gotten there. I think it might not actually in this move. But the big question is, will the Trump bump sustain itself or will it reverse? And I think the market's still wondering where these policy specifics are going to come in at, because he's talked broadly about cutting taxes, regulation, etc. But the market's ready, I think, for what are the specifics, and I think that will play into whether or not this rally is sustained. Now, this is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all about stocks and bonds. Any money questions are welcome. So give us a call at 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach me right now. Let's go to Simon in Chicago. How you doing, Simon?
Hey, Justin, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Just have a quick question. What do you think about a national debt rising, and how do you think, how healthy is that for the U.S. economy? Is it healthy to grow an economy on rising debt? That's my only question I had.
Okay. Well, it's certainly certainly the answer would be no. You know, nothing is sustainable by using debt for growth. Let's say that. Now, can we do that for a long time? Sure. I mean, our debt's been rising for decades and decades, and our economy's grown. But it's certainly not the healthiest way to grow, and long term, it will create problems. It's just a matter of how big can our national debt get before it is a problem. Now, do I think we're going to default on our debt? No, because we can print our own money. But that printing money can reduce the value of the dollar, create inflation, and over the long term, it's certainly a big negative. Do I think there's a problem in the short term? No, probably not. I don't, unless Trump does something like tries to renegotiate the debt somehow or do something out of the ordinary. But I don't think he'll do that. So the answer is no, it's not healthy, but it's not something I truly worry about in the short term.
I mean, considering the debt is so big, wouldn't you think that the government would start thinking about a solution how to lower the debt and think about a way to lower the dollar's value and, you know, devalue the dollar in a way to be able to repay the debt? And in a way, that's affect, I'm thinking, the buying purchase of the dollar.
That's what they'll eventually do. They'll monetize the debt. And how you monetize the debt is exactly what they did with QE, right? They printed money and bought treasuries, which is our debt, right? So it's something they will probably continue to do. And yes, I do think the government should address it and not wait for it to get out of control. Do I think they'll do that? No, I don't, because history says that our government only responds when there's a crisis. They don't get ahead of these type of things. So the odds are they will not change their stance, will continue to run large deficits. And we're at the point, you know, we're around the 100% debt to GDP ratio, which is in history been a time where the amount of debt becomes a big burden, right? If it's 20% of the GDP, you rather not have the debt, but it's not a big deal. When you start getting to 100, that's when it is a big deal, because the growth in your economy is eaten up by the debt payments, right? When you're paying 2-4% in your debt. So we are near that limit to where it starts becoming very counterproductive, but I also don't see a crisis in relation to the debt in the near term. So I don't think that the government will try to address it. Now, the new budget director, Mick Mulvaney, is a big deficit hawk. And, you know, will he push our new president to think about the national debt, reducing the national deficit? I think he will. How much success he has in that endeavor is very, very up in the air.
Understood. Thank you very much for answering my question.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Simon. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's segue to that. I talked just now about how tomorrow Mick Mulvaney is going to go in front of Congress, a confirmation hearing starts tomorrow, and, you know, if he's likely to hit a few snags. In the past, his budget position has been out of step with even the broader Republican Party, which is fiscally conservative. He strongly opposes higher spending, growing deficits. Both go along with Trump's key proposals. He's a founding member of the House Freedom Caucus, which really pushed back against Speaker John Boehner, former Speaker John Boehner, when he proposed budget deficits, etc. So Trump's promised agenda of spending increases in tax cuts could possibly result in large budget deficits. And this is out of step with Mulvaney's stance that he wants to balance the budget. Now, what are the key issues that Trump and him are going to disagree on. One is infrastructure spending. Trump's talked about, you know, building roads, highways, bridges, the wall, tunnels, railways, etc. Promised $1 trillion in new infrastructure spending. This is going to be difficult, even though some of that may come from public and private partnerships. Then you have domestic and defense spending. You know, Trump wants to beef up defense spending, but Mulvaney wants to offset that with spending cuts elsewhere. But where's that going to come from? Medicare, which Trump doesn't want to touch. What about non-defense domestic programs? Well, that's at a 50-year low as a percentage of GDP. Then there's Medicare and Social Security. All those things are going to need to be reformed. And then tax cuts are going to put a hole in our deficit. And how are they going to figure that out is going to be very, very interesting. So keep an eye on that. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our number.
Our podcast will continue momentarily. Here's good reason number two for a portfolio checkup with Steve.
You need to rebalance your portfolio.
Reducing risk is the number one priority for everyone these days. In a low interest environment, you crave those great returns that stocks can give, but you're afraid of the risk. So, what's the formula?
If you're younger, you want to have more exposure to more risk. If you're older, yes, you can have less risk. But the balance of high tech or blue chip or dividend paying stocks,
there's got to be balance.
You need to rebalance your portfolio.
And Steve can help you in person in California or via Skype or telephone from anywhere in the USA. To schedule your one-to-one, one-hour checkup with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Looking forward to our next Invest Talk. These could play a useful role for income investors, even in what is expected to be a rising rate environment. As interest rates rise, should you turn to preferred stocks? That's one of our talking points next time. For right now, that's up to you. Set the topic at 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, my name's Greg. I'm a podcast listener from Brisbane, California. I'm wondering if you could share your opinion on momentum investing. And specifically, I'm thinking of something like ticker symbol, M as in Mary, T as in Tom, U, M as in Mary. Just wondering if you think that might be a reasonable way or strategy to try and get some extra growth from a portfolio that includes more traditional investments like stocks, bonds, and like a total market index. All right, thank you.
I was looking at MTUM, which is the iShares Edge MSCI USA Momentum Factor ETF. And this is an ETF that is growth focused. It's invested in companies that have strong momentum, have strong growth. And I believe the index changes. I don't know the criteria, but it tends to lean towards growth oriented names. And as you know, on this show, we've talked about how the industry or the market's kind of moving into an environment where value investing is set to outperform. You know, it did last year, and I think it likely will for many years to come. You know, there'll be years where it won't, but those will probably be a minor divergence. And that just tends to be how these trends move, the cycles between growth and value investing. So I'm not a big fan of this. It's not a bad fund by any means, and doesn't mean you can't do well in it. But I think it's not going to have the same type of performance that you've seen over the past few years or so. And you can just see that now. It hit a high in August of last year and really has not gotten near past that where the S&P has. So it's not outperforming. And I think it won't outperform over the medium term until we turn back into a market where growth is the name of the game. And I think we're many years away from that. So momentum investing can work, but I'm not sure this is the best vehicle to try to capture that. So this MTUM is the symbol. Now, are there asset classes that you are missing in your portfolio? And more specifically, alternative investments. And the alternative investment industry has gotten a lot bigger than it used to be. And it's doubled in size since 2005. And one of the reasons is because it's become a lot easier and more cost-effective for investors to gain access to the space. And the industry touts that alternative investments increase diversification, they're better risk-adjusted returns, etc. But alternatives can be confusing and complex. And for that reason, investors looking to get into the space better be prepared to do their homework. Now, following the financial crisis, many investors started to look at alternatives and started to better understand the need for alternatives or the ability for alternatives to maybe fit in their portfolio. One of the reasons is because many, especially baby boomers, realized they didn't have time to weather another 50% loss in their portfolio. Now, the biggest problem, though, is investors don't understand them. Why? Because there's many different types of alternatives. Out of 574 investors who were asked to choose a definition of alternative investments from a list, 42% selected, "I honestly have no idea what alternative investments mean." And that's why they can be dangerous, because most people don't understand them. So you really need to do your homework. And you know, if you invest in one large cap fund versus another large cap fund, over a year, you know, the difference might be 1% or 2%. Whereas an alternative fund, a great manager might earn 10% and a bad manager might be down 10%. So it's a wide difference. And one of the reasons is because there's very different types of funds. And Morningstar defines 7 different types of alternative funds. One is a bear market fund. This looks to profit when the market goes down. They short stocks or short indexes, right? Then there's managed future funds. They use derivatives such as futures and options to make directional bets on various markets. Could be equity markets, commodity markets, currency markets, etc. They usually use trend following techniques, etc. And these can be very good when the market is trending badly, right? Because they can make bets all over the investment world in areas that are trending a certain way. They can go long certain areas and short other areas, right? But they can also underperform in many years. You know, stock market could be at 15% and managed futures could be down 3%. It's very happens all the time. Then there's market neutral funds. And this is kind of similar to kind of long short equity funds. They go long certain stocks, short sell other stocks or other indexes. Maybe they'll look at an industry and say, okay, we like these 5 companies within this industry, and we don't like these 5. So we're going to go long the 5 companies we do like and short the 5 companies we don't like. And hopefully the performance difference between the two is positive, right? But the overall correlation to the market isn't that big because you're long and short 5 names or 10 names, you know, long 5, short 5. You know, that's just an example of kind of how those work. Okay, so they can be good, but you're not going to get big returns, right? You're just going to get modest returns from year to year, up a little, down a little, but hopefully over the long term, you'll get good risk-adjusted returns is what's most important. Then those multi-currency funds, they invest in currencies. That's what it sounds like. They use derivatives and focus on the currency market, going long, say maybe the dollar, and short other currencies, or vice versa. And that depends on how the managers believe certain currencies will move. Then there's non-traditional bond funds. You know, you think of there's bond funds that invest only in government securities, treasuries. There's bond funds that only invest in high yield bonds, you know, junk rated bonds. Then there's bond funds that only invest in corporate, high grade corporate bonds. There's bond funds that invest in emerging market countries. Then there's non-traditional bond funds, and they kind of go wherever they feel is a risk-adjusted, attractive place to be. They might be long duration, meaning they go out long term. They might have very short duration, meaning they only buy short-term bonds. Then there's multi-alternative, and they combine a lot of these strategies, okay? And in today's environment, there's a lot of, you can get a lot of access to all these different types of alternatives. And they can be good, but you don't want to use them just to lower the risk in your portfolio, because you can just go to cash, right? You want to lower the risk of your portfolio, but also get some sort of decent return out of that risk. Adjusted return. So that's what you have to consider, is what is the risk adjusted return? What is the history of management? And you know, I like ones that don't focus on one particular strategy. I would like the multi-asset ones, multi-alternative funds most of all, if at all. You know, I think over long term, equities are the best bet. Let's go to James in New York. James, you there?
About Arconic Incorporated, ARNC is the ticker. Was just looking to see if maybe that might be a really good long-term holding for the portfolio.
I've never actually heard of this name. They develop and manufacture engineer products and solutions for the aerospace, industrial gas turbine, commercial transportation, and oil and gas markets. So they're also a mining company. Is that what I'm looking at?
ARNC, I believe it's the first thing. I wasn't aware of them being mining, but the technology providers for everything you just mentioned.
Okay, fabricated. Yeah, I think it looks like they mine it, but they also produce it for those particular industries. It's a decent-sized company, $9.3 billion market cap, so it's not small by any means. The biggest issue I'm seeing is that the sales are going down. Sales are supposed to go down 34% last year once they report earnings, down another 9% this year. Yields 1.1% is the dividend yield. Earnings did kind of turn around last quarter, which was nice, so I'm liking that. Modest amount of debt, not too bad. I'm trying to bring up kind of some more information. I'm not getting a lot from my systems. You know, where did you find this? What makes you kind of like it?
Well, I thought maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I would think this is like more of a non-cyclical type of holding that I could put in my portfolio. Something that wouldn't necessarily get beat up too much with the market.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that, and it looks like they just have a spinoff or a change of a symbol.
Yes, I believe it did. Alcoa, I believe, was the original company.
I see. Okay, so this is a spinoff from Alcoa. That makes more sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I'm getting that minor. Okay, it's just bringing up some old Alcoa information. This is definitely not non-cyclical. I'll say that. And I don't have a ton of information because of the spinoff, but don't think of this as a non-cyclical name by any means. This is certainly going to be cyclical, and I would not say this is a safe name to be in. Might not be a bad name. It's just not, you know, that non-cyclical safe name that you might be thinking about.
Okay, but it could be maybe an up-and-comer type of an opportunity, perhaps, and not necessarily, but it might. You know, be something that develops into the future.
Yeah, that's possibly true. I would need to do a little more digging on what they do and what this entity is. You know, it's a spinoff from Alcoa. Is it only focused on the aerospace industry, the industrial side of the economy? You know, gas turbines, commercial transportation, oil and gas market. Those are all very cyclical. So, you know, how is their technology and who are their customers? I would need to do a little more digging on that, but don't think of this as at all of a safe name. It's going to be very cyclical, and you're going to have a lot more volatility than your average company from this name.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for the call, James. Time to remind you that Steve will be in San Ramon January 31st. That is a week from tomorrow. For individual retirement reviews for a limited number of our listeners, talks with them about their goals, needs, and offers some suggestions on how to improve the results that they're getting from the money they do have and get them on the right track to make sure that they're meeting those goals. So he meets with listeners, clients as well, reviews their portfolios, reviews their situation, makes sure that we're all on the same page. And he does that very regularly. So he's going to be in San Ramon on January 31st. He's also, I believe, going to be in San Jose on February 8th as well. So if you'd like to set up a time with Steve on either of those dates, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Did you know you can listen to this Invest Talk again? Maybe you missed a part of it, or you want to hear an answer again to get it clear. It's easy to do. Just go to investtalk.com and look for the Talking Point headline, and then scroll across to the episode you want. There are 5 episodes there from the most recent days. There's also an archive on the site to give you access to 10 of the most recent Invest Talks. We're always there for you.
Now, is gold's lustrous rise so far this year the best sign yet that the Trump rally is fading? Remember, after Trump got elected, gold took a big hit. The market popped, and it took it was elected in early November, and the market kind of really petered out and not necessarily declined a lot. It has declined since middle of December, but not dramatically. But it's stalled. It's a good way to describe it. It's stalled since middle of December, and really haven't gone very far in the last, say, 5 weeks. But gold has done really well. So far this year, gold is up about 5.5%. I believe this is as of middle of last week. So it's up even more than that now. Silver is up somewhere in the neighborhood of 8, 9%. Then the S&P and the Dow, they're barely positive, modestly positive. I think the Russell 2000 small caps are actually down for the year at the close of today. So, in theory, the prospect of economic growth and rising inflation are bullish for the dollar, for stocks, but bad news for assets like gold, which, is one of the reasons why gold fell after the election. Now, the big rally at the end of last year was driven by the speculation that Trump was going to be good for the economy. And fund managers scrambling to get cash to work, et cetera, off the sidelines. And it's the optimism lifted stocks to fresh highs. Loosening regulation, lower taxes, fiscal stimulus, and that's kind of started to fade. And to me, this rise in gold is showing that the market is starting to lose faith that those will actually come to fruition, or at least to the extent that the market was pricing in. And if you look at the historical correlation between commodities and the dollar, the outperformance of commodities in the last 6 months of the year in relation to the dollar, meaning usually the dollar, when the dollar goes up, which it did over the second half of last year, usually commodities are down over that period, and they weren't. They were actually up a few percent. So that is showing a positive divergence, and I think commodity prices are headed much, much higher. So give us a call, 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Mike in Alameda. How you doing, Mike?
Well, I'm doing well, Justin. Thank you. Hey, Qualcomm has taken a hit the last couple of days. What are your thoughts on this issue versus Apple?
Well, it's certainly an issue. Luckily, we sold this for clients in the mid to high 60s, and it's declined since then. That was just a couple months ago. It's declined today big, down to mid-50s. 54.88 is the close today. Jason and I in the office were talking about this. I don't think they're going to end their relationship with Apple. They make good products, and I think they'll still be part of the iPhone. When you have this type of momentum to the downside, it's likely to head lower. So we're targeting it more in the mid-40s. Now it's in the mid-50s. So if it gets in the mid 40s, then I'll start. We'll start thinking about picking it back up again. But at this level or after this big drop, you got to see kind of how it reacts. And if it goes sideways from here, it's probably just going to eventually break lower. It's going to need a big reversal day on big volume for me to be confident that it's over. But I think that'll happen probably closer to the mid-40s than it will in the mid-50s. So on your watch list, but I wouldn't buy it yet.
Okay, very good. Okay, thanks, Justin. I appreciate your thoughts.
No problem, Mike. Thanks for calling. Let's go to O'Neill in Washington, D.C., the belly of the beast.
Hey. Yes. Hey, how you doing? Thank you.
I'm doing good.
For taking my call. Quick question for you. Both my wife and I are maxing out on our 401ks, and we're in our mid-30s right now, and we're thinking about retirement based on our my current family, my father and my mother going through like medical issues, and they are of retirement age, so they are 75, 76 years old, and I'm working through my father's investments as well as his Medicare and Medicaid financial. So what would be a good number for a person like myself and my wife to start thinking about in like investing for the long term, say 30 years from now? I know that's a loaded question.
What do you mean?
What do you mean
by a good number? Are you saying what your goal should like be to retire?
Yeah, exactly. Like a percentage of how much we're accruing now versus 30 years from now, if that makes any sense. How much should we be putting away yearly for the next 30 years?
I think a good indication typically you should be saving 10 to 15% of your annual salary. That's what everybody should do. And, you know, when they hit 65, they should have enough money, right? If you're looking to retire sooner, then you need to up that probably 20% of your pay should be saved, maybe even 25%. You know, I could run retirement maps for you. And, you know, if we wanted to talk, if you want to talk to me in the office, I can kind of run you through different scenarios, and we have software that does that. But if you're trying to retire early, which that sounds like what you're trying to do, correct?
Not retire early, but just when I hit like 65 or 62,
I would target 12 to 15% of your pay should be saved in some sort of an account, whether it's 401k, IRA, etc.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for calling. I think it was a long-winded answer, but it's important to have that goal. You know, that goes back to what I was talking about at the top of the hour of what are the most important aspects of getting to where you want to go, and being financially independent. And the biggest one is having a goal. What are those goals? What do I need to get to? Dollar amount? How much do I need to save every month, every year, right? And when you figure out what goals you want, then you can figure out how much you save. That's second most important. Then your asset allocation is third most important. Then your own behavior, making sure you're not making poor decisions based on emotions. That's a big part of it. Then being tax efficient. That's certainly, those strategies are important as well. And then lastly, actually, is the investment selection. You know, we get calls about, should I buy this stock? Should I buy, you know, what do you think of this sector, etc.? Well, that's the least important aspect of all of this, okay? So just be aware of that. Now, our time is up for this hour. Here's a quote that is not so subtle, prodding to all investors to do their homework. Robert J. Shiller said, it amazes me how people are often more willing to act based on little or no data than to use data that is a challenge to assemble. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Thanks for being with us. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, enjoy the rest of your day.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.